It's Fight the Empire. At 10, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, it's Between the Covers. Ken Jones interviews Leland Chuk, author of the novel No Good, Very Bad Asian. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk, where author Renee Watson introduces her latest work, Some Places More Than Others. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes or Google Play. Want a third way to listen to all your favorite KBOO programming? Then download our mobile app today.
So I'm on the phone with Curtis Blow. You are listening to Culture in Motion, the twice monthly radio show on KBOO.fm or 90.7 FM if you're actually living here in Portland, Oregon, where myself, your host, Mike Crenshaw, has guests on and we have a conversation about art, music, culture, activism, politics. And I have a very special guest tonight. We've got Curtis Blow on the phone. Curtis Blow, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing mighty fine. I'm blessed. Thank you guys for having me on the show. I appreciate it. All right.
So, Curtis Blow, I grew up, you were one of the first people responsible for blessing my ears and my heart and consciousness with this sound, you know, rap music. And we would later come to understand it as part of hip-hop culture. So, you've been doing... I'm going to ask you a few questions about your work as an artist, but I also want to segue into the Hip Hop Nutcracker, which is why you're going to be in Portland. But how long have you been doing what you do as an MC, as a rapper?
Well, it's how long have I been in hip hop? It's been about 45 years for me. 45, 46 years. I started way back in 1972. That's 47 years, actually. As a b-boy breakdancer down in Harlem, USA, at a place called Chuck Center. There's also the Factory West or the Dukes. And, of course, give a shout-out to cool DJ Herc with the Executive Playhouse and Claremont Center and the Hevelo and places like that, the Twilight Zone, and places up in the Bronx as well. We were representing Dancing to Soul music way back in the early 70s. So wow. I've been in the game for a long time. I've seen it happen from the embryo. The embryo part, you know, the first parties, you know, like I said, seeing cool DJ Herc and of course Pete DJ Jones and people like that, and knowing the difference between the two DJs is very, very important. I hold that dearly and deeply in my heart.
Man, okay, so like, you know, I've done a lot of like reading and trying to get aware of how this culture was born, this hip hop culture. And, you know, we definitely hear a lot about DJ Kool Herc and the parties on Sedgwick. But so you just listed a bunch of places that I had never heard of. You said you're from Harlem. So was there a situation where things were happening simultaneously at different times that all eventually merged to create the culture of hip hop? Or was it more of a linear thing where it happened one place first and then the people who were present at the first place took it to the next place and so on?
That's a good question. There were things happening then simultaneously, like the two DJs I mentioned, Cool DJ Herc and, of course, Pete DJ Jones. There were two different markets. Grandmaster Flash likes to call them the shoe people and the sneaker people. Now, the shoe people, you know, you remember disco, when disco was really, really hot in the 70s, and people worked all week, and on the weekends they dressed up in suits and ties and silk dressers and had shoes on, you couldn't get into these clubs without shoes. You couldn't wear sneakers to the clubs back in the 70s, downtown and midtown in Manhattan and stuff like that. So you would work all week, and then you would go out to the disco. And the disco had the big disco ball and the light shining on the ball and the mirrors. And it was just an incredible scene. You know, you would dance your night away. Forget about your troubles. Forget about your cares. Just dance your night away. Mm. And that was disco. But then you had on the other side of the coin, you had the younger kids who couldn't get into the disco, or, you know, people who didn't have shoes on a Friday or Saturday. Mm. These uptown clubs around in the neighborhoods, we had all ages events where they didn't worry about how old you were. You had to be 18 in order to get into a club. But, you know, that's when they had park jams and block parties and community centers and house parties and parties in the school gyms and stuff like that. And these were for the kids who couldn't get into the club. Mm-hmm. I remember some of the kids telling stories. They used to take black socks and put them over their sneakers so that they could get into the club. And that was one of the things we did as a teenager, trying to hang out with the adults and the older kids. But there was a whole different kind of style of music that was played for the kids. Of course, you know, we had the stuff that was played on the radio was predominantly was disco, you know, like Donna Summers and YMCA and right. Patrick Jope and, you know, the Village People and all the disco that was on the radio. But then you had the soul music that we grew up on in the 60s, was James Brown and the Motown sound, the Isley Brothers, and people like Jimmy Castor and the Castor Bunch, and Booker T and the MGs with the song called Melting Pot. Listen to Me by Baby Huey was another style of music that the kids played because of the DJ I named DJ Kool Herc was playing soul music in the world of disco. And the one important thing, incredible thing about his beats that he was playing, the music he played was dance music. It was soul music that we grew up on in the 60s and 70s of predominantly James Brown. But each one of these songs had a break in the song, and that was the most important part of the music when you're talking about dancing and in a club, because whenever the song got to the break, everyone got energetic. They did their best dance moves. They threw their hands in the air, made a lot of noise, and we created circles. That's when the cypher started. Mm. You know, like Saturday Night Fever, you know, you have the best dancer in the club and everyone stops dancing and they move back and create a circle around him. And then somebody comes in that circle and they compete. And there's a competition, and the winner of the competition is the most popular dancer, you know. Right. He's the hero. He gets the girl, you know what I mean? So that sort of thing went on in a Kool Herc party, but these kids inside the circle were doing acrobatic moves, dancing like James Brown with splits and all of this incredible dance moves that we created, and it soon turned out to be break dancing. And that cypher is around today. You see MCs inside the cypher, that circle. You see DJs battling. And that's where that competition in hip-hop comes from. So, you know, that was the style, but you definitely had two different markets. Like I said, the shoe people and the sneaker people. The sneaker people later went on to become hip-hop. A lot of the shoe people who were incredible DJs as well, I would like to mention like DJ Hollywood, Eddie Cheeba, Love Buck Starsky, playing for the shoe people. They definitely had their style. It was just sophisticated hip hop, I'd say. Mm-hmm. But the sneaker people definitely went on to inspire and motivate everyone to what we call this culture of hip hop.
This is okay. So thank you for breaking it down. And it is so fascinating to listen to you tell it from your first person experience of actually being there. And it actually opens the door to for so many more questions, you know? And I don't want to run out of time before we get to talk about the hip-hop Nutcracker, but I wanted to ask you, how old were you when you made your way from being the B-boy to actually rocking the mic?
Right. So I started out in 1972 at 13 years old. The older kids on the block came and got me. They heard about this young little Kurt who could do all these flips and stuff. And they put me down with their crew called the Hill Boys. And we were from the west side of Harlem, Sugar Hill, the actual original Sugar Hill, over there where Malcolm X used to hustle and hang out. And so a few years went by. I started emceeing in 1974. When I was about 15 years old, and that's when I started, you know, DJing and MCing around in my neighborhood, and I got that experience of, you know, knowing how to rock a crowd, knowing how to play music, because the DJ was the focal point of the party. Mm-hmm. Don't get it twisted. He controlled the lights. He controlled the ambiance of the club. He controlled the tempo of the music, you know, what songs, the playlist. And it was very, very important. He hired and fired the MCs. The MCs started out, we started out as a dime a dozen. Uh-huh. You know, what the MCs did was we packed the equipment up for the DJ and carried it to the club, set up the equipment in the club, and then at the end of the night, we broke it down and carried it back to the house. And the DJ let us in free if we did this stuff. And if we were really good, he let us make announcements like, "Yo, Joey, your mom's outside. It's 10 o'clock. You gotta go home." Or, "Yo, Sam, your car is getting towed." You know?
Wow.
But I had to mention this other DJ, DJ Grandmaster Flash. You probably heard of him with the Furious Five and
indeed,
that song called The Message, one of the greatest songs in the history of hip hop. And Grandmaster Flash was a DJ who understood the playlist that Herc was playing, you know, and how important the break was, and how the people really got excited when the song broke down to the drums or the drums and the bass in the middle of the song. And so he had to figure out to extend that break, because the break was only 15, 20 seconds long. And the people were going crazy, but then here comes the singing part of the song again, and we're dancing normal. Mm-hmm. I remember being at the Kool Herc party, and Kool Herc would play the whole song, and then, you know, we're standing around with our arms crossed, the B-boy stands waiting for the break, and when the break comes, that's when we do our moves, right? So Flash wanted to find a way to extend the break, so he got two of the same copies and just played the break. Kool Herc would play a whole song, and we were waiting for the break, but Flash went straight to the juggler and played the break. He started out playing the break, and then before it went to the end of the break, when it got to the singing part, he played it again, looping it, creating this extended version of this break. So the break now from 15, 20 seconds went to 3 or 4 minutes, you know, and he was so very fast going from one turntable to the other. So and that whole process, that whole evolution, what we call turntablism, gave the MC it enabled us to shine and enabled us to do more than just make announcements. So now the MC had to do more for the entertainment, the overall entertainment of the party. So we started using crowd response and telling jokes and, you know, writing stories and rhythmic rap and just motivating the people to have a good time. And so we became the focal point of the party. It was sort of like the changing of the guard that Flash enabled the MC to shine. So we went from standing on the side of the turntables right next to the DJ to going out front. And when we went out front, that's when the MC really, really took off.
Wow. So I remember.
And that was about 1977, 78, when that transition happened.
And how long was it between 77, 78, when that transition happened, and you recorded your first record, hit record, as Curtis Blow? Because I know it was around, I think, 78, if I'm not mistaken.
No, 1979.
79, because I heard the breaks back then, right?
In 1980.
In 80, okay.
My first song was Christmas Rap. And I want to say thank you to all the DJs and radio personalities around the country that have made that song a classic. You know, they play it every year, like Nat King Cole, and I just thank you. You know, you definitely added to my legacy with that song right there. That's my favorite still. My first song, Christmas Rap, came out December 19th, 1979.
Wow. Being somebody that's been around since the beginning, and watching where things are now, do you recall the time in your mind's eye where you said or decided, I'm going to be a world famous superstar? Was that something that you held in your vision, or was that something that just you didn't expect and it just kind of evolved because of the life that you...
I'm sorry, can you say that louder? I didn't hear you.
I said, when did you know that you were... Did you know you were going to be a world-famous superstar through this thing called...
Well, you know, I really want to stay humble, and of course, as a minister and a Christian, you know, we have humility, and... But it was sort of like my plan and mission to make that happen. That's why I went to college and studied communications, became a communications major, which was the most relative career that is to hip hop. And and so I studied, you know, a lot of rappers. As rappers, we are communicators. Mm-hmm. We're part of the oratory. We're orators, and I studied a lot of the great speakers during our time, and banked on this career as a public speaker, or politics is also, you know, broadcasting, journalism. You know, and then of course preaching. I found out that the most passionate of our speakers, the greatest speakers of our time, like Winston Churchill and Barbara Jordan and JFK, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, the most passionate of the great speakers, the great orators, were the preachers that made a way. So we have a window. We had all kinds of windows and opportunities as orators in communications. And I found that out when I went to college, early college. And I just thank God that I was in the right place at the right time to actually be able to do this, because it is a fun job, I'm going to tell you. And, you know, I thank God every day.
So you have been doing this thing, you know, 47 years involved in this hip hop culture, and now you're out here touring with the Hip Hop Nutcracker. So the Hip Hop Nutcracker is going to be in Portland in November, and this month, and a lot of young people from across the city are going to be able to see the show because the schools are getting people out there and into the venue. How did you get involved with the Hip Hop Nutcracker? Were you one of the creators, one of the writers from the beginning?
No, I got involved with the Hip Hop Nutcracker because we have mutual friends. My good friend came to one of my shows up in the Bronx. He was backstage and he was like, wow, man, great performance. But you know, you would be a great MC for this new event, this new play that's happening called the Hip Hop Nutcracker. I said, the Hip Hop Nutcracker? He said, yeah, let me introduce you to the people. So I went out to NJPAC and went to one of the rehearsals and saw all the kids, man, They were break dancing to classical music, and a DJ and a violinist doing duets together. And the story, it was just amazing to me. So it was like a no-brainer. Yeah, I definitely wanted to be a part. A big shout out to Jennifer Weber and Michael Fiddleston. Those are the creators. Mm-hmm. And they did an incredible job, a great, great, great job. They reinvent themselves every year and make this this event such a joyful holiday mashup for the whole family. It's incredible. Jennifer Weber is also the choreographer. She put some dance moves in this piece that are awesome. And, you know, as a B-boy myself, I just love to be a part of this whole thing with all the dancers, about 20 dancers from all over the world, all stars, dance crew. It's incredible, along with our DJ, DJ Boo.
Yeah.
But these people are giving 120-150%, man. It's awesome to see. Definitely something to see for the holidays when the love is in the air, and it's a holiday mashup, as we say.
That's what's up. Big shout out to Portland 5 for making this presentation available to us here. The audience is in Portland. I'm really looking forward to checking that out. Big shout out to DJ Boo. You know, Curtis Blow, I'm also an MC, and I was able to tour Moscow, Russia with DJ Boo a couple of weeks ago. So that's where I met him, and we got to see hip-hop culture alive and well and thriving in Moscow, Russia together. So I'm looking forward to catching up with Boo when he's in town. Now, you're looking at hip-hop now and thinking about what it's evolved into, the commercial success of hip-hop, carried primarily through rappers, you know, who are selling records. Is there anything you see right now that inspires you, that makes you excited looking at the future and further evolution of the culture?
Well, there's one thing that really excites me. Well, a couple of things. Kanye West is exciting me right now. I just wanted to give a shout out to him. Uh-huh. And his Sunday service, and his new album, Jesus is King, is incredible. I think he has the potential of bringing many folks to Christ and to the kingdom. We all are fishers of men. And he has, like I said, a lot of potential. So I support him in his new walk in Christ. But the other thing was, like I was getting back to the hip-hop nutcracker, working with all the young people that I have been working with, and just seeing them and seeing their energy and their passion and how much they give 150% to each performance. And it's just an all-star cast of dancers that give their all, and it's incredible to be around this energy. Last year was our best year for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to repeating that, because we had the same whole crew coming back, and just the vibe, the energy, the spirit of love that's in the air when we're traveling around definitely is inspirational. And I just wanted to say, you know, big ups to the whole crew and all the creators, like I said, Jennifer Weber and Michael Fiddleston. It's some good stuff, some really, really, really good stuff that they put together.
How many years have you been touring with Hip Hop Nutcracker?
This should be my 6th year, I believe.
Okay. And so you spoke about spirituality and how that plays a major role. I'm thinking back over the course of my own growth and development, and trying to grasp a deeper relationship with the meaning of life and the meaning of existence and these things and the different ways in which spirituality can show up and take form of different kinds of religion and so forth. There's a debate that's always been part of culture, you know, that I've participated in regard to Christianity and how can black people be Christians when there's a white Jesus and so on and so forth. How do you grapple with those contradictions that you run into?
Well, I see, you have to understand, I've been in the business for a long time. Of course, I've had my ups and downs and controversies and dealing with the naysayers, people who, when I first started out, were talking about like, oh, it's just a fad. It's not going to be around for a long time. You know what I mean? It's not singing, you know. People rap because they can't sing, you know. And so all of these things, I just take with a grain of salt. You know, they're like the Bible says, the fiery darts that are thrown at you, just to throw you off your game and get you into that anger mode. And so we as Christians, I've been a minister for about 12 years now, and it doesn't affect me like it used to. Mm. Now it's all love now. And you have to understand, I have a testimony that's very, very, very miraculous in dealing with the power of the Holy Spirit and prayer, and still being able to do what I do is a miracle in itself. Because just a few months ago, I had open heart surgery.
Oh, wow.
Emergency open heart surgery, and it was for 12 hours, and they didn't think I was going to make it because they had to freeze my heart for 12 hours, and they didn't think it was going to beat again because it was so weak in the first place. And I got through it. My wife was a prayer warrior and had the family and all of hip-hop praying for me, and God answered the prayers. After 12 hours, it was a miracle. The doctor said, you know, the heart started right back up, like there was no problem. And I'm still here to live and breathe and talk about it, the power of God. And so whatever the naysayers and whatever, you know, controversies that are out there, I just want to say I love everyone. I'm a living and breathing and walking testimony of the power of God. And that's my faith. That's the essence of my faith. There is a God, and God is powerful. Power of prayer, and we're fishes and men. Let's go.
Man, it's been great. It's been an honor talking to you, Curtis Blow. I appreciate everything you contributed to hip hop and helped me inspire and find a path in life that I'm passionate about. And I want to say to the listeners that the Hip Hop Nutcracker is going to be in town November 12th and 13th at the Keller Auditorium. You might want to get tickets soon, because if it's not already sold out, it's about to be. And once again, Curtis Blow, have a good day, brother, and we will see you at the Hip Hop Nutcracker.
All right, November 12th. I'll see you guys soon, all right?
Okay.
Portland! Peace.
Yes. Peace.
Clap your hands, everybody, if you got what it takes. Cause I'm Curtis Blow, and I want you to know that these are the breaks. Breaks on a bus, breaks on a car, breaks to make you a superstar, breaks to win and breaks to lose. But these here breaks will rock your shoes. And break it up, break it up, break it up! If your woman steps out with another man,
that's the break.
And she runs off to them to Japan,
that's the break.
And the IRS says they want to chat. And you can't explain why you claimed your cat.
That's the break.
And Ma Bell sends you a whopping bill.
That's the break.
With 18 phone calls to Brazil.
That's the break.
And you borrowed money from the mob.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7. That was Culture in Motion. Coming up next is going to be Sojourner Truth, but first we got a couple messages for you.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Weird Portland Gala on Thursday, November 7th from 7:30 to 11 p.m. at Polaris Hall in Portland. The Weird Portland Costume Gala and Live Auction will bring together many of Portland's notable eccentrics, including Mo Show the Cat Rapper, former Mayor Bud Clark, Rojo the Llama, Mr. Statue, and Portland's own Elvis. Again, that's the Weird Portland Gala on Thursday, November 7th from 7:30 to 11 p.m. at Polaris Hall, 635 North Killingsworth Court in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you so much for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, palm oil is one of the world's leading agricultural commodities and is widely used as a cooking oil and food ingredient. The immense plantations that grow palm trees have contributed to the destruction of the rainforest and wildlife of Southeast Asia, with devastating